This is Queen Elizabeth, speaking to you from the 16th century. Nothing displeases me more than history myths. And you know what I do when I get displeased? Get an axe and chop off some heads? No! I summon Professor Buzzkill, who explains everything. And I'm totally stoked that he's here again. Join me in listening to a new episode.
Hello, Buzzkillers. Yes, indeed. It's a Fiction Friday. In fact, it's our second Fiction Friday, and we're so totally stoked that Susan Holloway Scott is here with us to talk about two of her new novels, I, Eliza Hamilton, and The Secret Wife of Aaron Burr. Susan Holloway Scott is the author of over 50 historical novels and novellas, and they've received numerous awards, and there are over 3 million copies of print and been published in 19 foreign countries around the world. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to talk about these two books in tandem because, of course, we can compare Hamilton and Burr all the time, and I just thought it was absolutely fascinating that they were so different in the fact that first of all, took a real person or an acknowledged marriage, Eliza Hamilton, and then there's this other secret wife of Aaron Burr. And I wondered how you came up with that. First off, I wonder how you came up with that idea of doing it that way rather than, you know, making a completely fictional novel about mistresses or something like that.
Well, we'll go back a bit. I had wanted to write about Eliza Hamilton years and years ago, long before the play. It was back at a time when colonial America, the revolution, was completely DOA in publishing in New York. No one wanted anything to do with it. No one had ever heard of the Hamiltons. And so I just sort of put that book on the back burner and wrote a series of books about 17th century royal mistresses. Mm-hmm. When the Hamilton play came out, one of the editors contacted my agent and said, does she still have that idea? Because maybe it would sell now. So that's how it came about. And I was thrilled to be able then to write about Eliza because she'd still been percolating in the back of my imagination for a long time. So when I finished that book, we were talking about what to do next.
Yeah.
And I hadn't necessarily thought of doing another book with the Hamilton, those same people and connected with it. And we were throwing around ideas, and it was one of those famous publisher lunches that you always hear about where you're there with your editor and you're pitching and it's supposed to be this great, exciting thing. But it was horrible because she just kept rejecting every idea I had. Yeah. So sort of in desperation, I kind of threw out this idea that I'd come across just the briefest mention of a woman who had been worked in Burr's household. I thought she would be kind of a fun thing to write about.
Yeah.
And my editor said, that's it. It's exactly what we want. That's your next book. And right. I was like, oh, good. We got that settled. Then all the way home on Amtrak, I was thinking, what have I gotten into? Because there is nothing about this woman anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's going to be your next question.
Well, actually, I was going to say we should remind the Buzzkillers, because we have so many young Buzzkillers that won't remember what life was like before the Hamilton play musical and then and movie and then the new thing on the Disney Channel came out. When you say ideas about Hamilton's wife in the period were DOA, that of course means dead on arrival. It's for both our foreign Buzzkillers and our younger Buzzkillers who don't remember. But it's all come back now because Hamilton is now in these last month or 2 months has been sort of one of the things that's keeping our mind off the troubling times now.
It has. And I've always enjoyed that time period. So I was very pleased to be able to write about it again. My first books were all set during the American Revolution. So that was fun to be able to return to it. But it was just for a while there, no one cared at all about it. It was not a hot selling era.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's start off with Eliza Hamilton. Who was she? Let's start there. We don't want to give away too many plot details or do any spoilers for the Buzzkillers because we want them to get the books. But let us know a little bit about
her. It's also one of those things that I think sort of by now most people have some idea of the Hamilton story.
Right.
And I'm always surprised when people don't.
Yeah.
When I finally saw the play at the end of it, and I think everybody knows how it ends at this point,
mm-hmm.
you know, the inevitable ending. And yet there were people behind us sat up and or stood up you know, ready to leave, and just said, "Well, I didn't see that coming."
You're kidding.
It's like, okay. So.
You're kidding. Wow.
No.
I knew that from when I was a kid.
Well, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Pennsylvania, but that's it.
Yeah.
That's
so I think
story.
People on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I grew up in Northern New Jersey, and everybody knew Hamilton.
And it happened there. Hamilton. The duel happened there.
Yeah. If you're up in North Jersey. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll try not to do any spoilers. I think most people do know that Hamilton was the scrappy orphan from the Caribbean who comes to New York City, makes good during the Revolution, connects with the right people, mainly George Washington, has a brilliant mind for finances, becomes the first Secretary of the Treasury, creates the whole American financial system, establishes the first national bank, does a whole lot of other things. He was very productive.
Right, right.
And then dies relatively young.
Right. And what about Eliza?
And Eliza was very different from him in her upbringing. She was born into a very wealthy family in upstate New York.
Uh-huh.
And her paths crossed with Hamilton during the war. Her father was a general and was also friends with George Washington.
Right.
So they met during that point. It was a quick wartime romance. And a lot of people at the time, and certainly now historians will say about it, well, he married her for his money. But I think it was very much a love match. I think they were a very good match emotionally, temperamentally. He was very needy. She liked to be needed.
Right.
So I think it was, in that sense, it was a very good marriage in that sense.
But there must have been, during the marriage, a lot of the marriages at that time, especially for revolutionary leaders, there must have been a lot of difficulty. I mean, it's politically, it's tumultuous. Socially, it's tumultuous. Hamilton must be a nervous wreck having to deal with all the finances and stuff like that, or at least the theory of the finances.
I think that he was probably a difficult man to be friends with. And I think it's telling. I think a lot of his contemporaries also found him a difficult man to be around. Mm-hmm. All those men often ran for office. He was never elected to any office. He was always appointed.
Right, right.
So I think people recognized what he could do, but they didn't necessarily like him.
Right. How did the marriage hold up under these circumstances?
It seemed to hold up just fine. I mean, I think that there were definitely, as again, I don't want to tell
reveal
things, but there is a very sizable stress point, conflict later on in their marriage that they seem to come through.
Yeah.
And we don't, part of the problem with all of trying to figure out what Eliza thought is that her letters are gone.
Oh, okay.
Now, I know in the play, they have a beautiful scene and a wonderful song where she burns her letters. I think that her letters were probably destroyed by one of her sons later on in the 19th century, or perhaps by her.
Uh-huh.
But all the letters related to Hamilton and her marriage are gone.
Right.
I live in hope that someday they're going to turn up in a garage, a box somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. We all live in hope for that sort of archival.
So we don't really know how she felt about all of this, which is part of the reason that it's fun to write a book and give her a voice.
So,
in the marriage.
So what kind of voice did you give her in the marriage, and what kind of, you know, how does a historical novelist go about doing that?
Her letters to Hamilton are gone, but there are other letters from her.
Okay.
And there are other letters from her sisters, other family members and friends describing her, talking about her. So you get a sense of her as a person from other people's points of view.
Right.
I think part of it is you have to kind of immerse yourself in what the characters were doing, what was happening at the time, what their backgrounds were. And for her, she's an educated elite woman from New York State, from a Dutch American background, who also grew up in a house with enslaved servants, which is something that has to be considered as well. And then how her sense of patriotism, because she grew up in a household where they were entertaining other generals she met, you know, as a child, she met Benjamin Franklin and Lafayette. All these people would come visit her father in the house. So she was very aware politically and very savvy from that sense.
Right.
So she was made to be a political wife in a lot of ways.
And that comes through in the surviving correspondence and the other evidence you've found.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you end up liking her or having any sort of feeling or sympathy with her? I mean, how does I never written a novel and only read them. By the way, Lady Buzzkill's a big fan.
You get very protective.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. When you spend a lot of time with them and in their heads and stuff, you become very emotionally attached and you get very defensive if somebody says, oh, well, she was no good or she was, it's like, no, you can't say that. Since I write these books first person too, it's very much, you very much are in one person's point of view. And so there are some things that might not, if I were writing a historical, you know, a straight history,
right,
I would write it in a more open-minded or whatever, but everything has to stay, you have to see everything through her eyes,
right,
and her emotions.
Right. Now, you say about Eliza especially that when they move to Washington, she becomes an important member of Washington society, but she also is a sort of a political ally of Hamilton and manages their household in such a way that it helps his career. Now, is this a very relatively common thing for political wives to have done at that time?
Sure. And it was also be what she had been raised to do, which was to be a woman running an elite household, which it isn't just, oh, you're a housewife. You're overseeing a large staff of people. You have to arrange entertainments. You basically have to do a lot of things behind the scenes to make it all look effortless for your husband. She was very good at that. They also had a large number of children,
right,
and she's overseeing their education and their upbringing as well.
Yeah, I often think of a lot of these political wives, especially in that generation, as kind of being like the other chief of staff for their husband.
They are very much so.
Yeah.
And I think because of Hamilton's often kind of prickly, you know, personality and saying the wrong things, I get the sense that a lot of times Eliza kind of smoothed things over, would sort of clean up after him, I guess. You know, everybody liked Eliza.
Right.
And everybody would come to dinner because of her, they recognized things that she did behind the scenes too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I'd love to keep asking questions about her and how this plot evolves, but we don't want to give too much away.
I know, it's hard.
So it's very hard. So let's move on to a woman named Mary Emmons. Tell us about her.
So this is she's about as different as Eliza Schuyler Hamilton could be.
Yeah.
She's one of those people that a lot of historians say doesn't even exist,
mm-hmm,
which really, you know, there's really nothing. There's no letters to have been destroyed. There's no portraits. There's nothing about her.
Right.
Most people, historians, no Burr historians admit that she even exists.
All
there's
right,
no
okay.
mention of her anywhere. So she's become sort of a family legend.
Yeah.
She comes, it's an oral tradition through the family, and she's mentioned in one or two places. But really, as I said, historians say there's not enough about her to include her in anything or admit that she exists. So what I had to do was sort of create her entire life.
Yeah.
I knew that there are very few things that are known about her. One, that she was born in India, but we don't know where. We know that she had a French name, that she probably came to Haiti or was brought to Haiti, then ends up in New Jersey, probably in the household of Aaron Burr's first wife,
right,
Theodosia, the famous Theodosia Prudhoe. And then after that, we don't know what happens except that she has two children with Burr. And those two, when she dies in Philadelphia, she's a free woman. And the descendants of those two children, a boy and a girl, many of them still live in the Philadelphia area, and they very much regard her as a real person.
Yeah, well, as you say in the book, in the introduction to the book, and in the notes, and in the sort of discussion questions for book groups, there eventually is an acknowledgement of the children through DNA evidence. There's an acknowledgement.
What the DNA proof is that they can't actually prove a link to Burr because there's no, Aaron Burr had no surviving children, so he has no direct
evidence.
But what they did is they did DNA testing between the Mary Emmons descendants and then going back to other Burr family members from the extended Burr family, and they found enough conclusive evidence that they think they're related. And also they found that the Mary Emmons descendants do in fact have the DNA that makes them come from India. So that part of that story holds up as well.
Oh, right. Okay. How did you go about then? I don't know because I'm not a historical novelist, but how do you make her a believable historical character? Is that easier than making, than turning what little you have about
it's
Eliza
different.
Hamilton?
I've never written one that had so little to go by.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really just these very few sort of landmarks in her life where you think she would be. And I had to sort of create her, tell her story from her point of view, and then weave her into what's known about Burr's life. And Burr was extremely private and very guarded and did not commit a lot of things to paper about his personal life. And what was there, I mean, his letters are very funny when he writes to his daughter and to his other wife, but a lot of things were destroyed by the men that were writing his biography, his good friends that he entrusted to write about him after he died. He left all his papers, and those men destroyed anything that they thought was detrimental to Burr's memory, and particularly things related to women. So if there was any, you know, evidence there at that point of Mary and her children, I'm sure that they went into the fire with other things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can imagine. But Ms. Scott, I find it so fascinating to talk to novelists because I've never done it before, never talked to them before about how to create historical figures. But there are plenty of trials and tribulations for a research historian, and they must be very similar to the trials and tribulations you have, finding the stuff you think you need to build a character.
It is. And I think one of the things that you're trying to do, you're not just reporting the facts.
Right, right.
You're trying to build it as a character, somebody that people are going to empathize with. And I take my research and the history very seriously because I know that for a lot of the readers of my books, this is the only history they're going to get. They're not going to pick up a nonfiction book. What they'll learn about Eliza Hamilton or Mary Emmons is going to be from my books, and that will be it. So I don't, you know, I try and make it as accurate and respectful, I guess, of the real people. I consider that too. When you're writing about real people, I don't think you can suddenly change history on them and give Eliza Hamilton a happy ending. You know, I don't think
you can jerk around
with things. But that's okay. I mean, I think that's I like being able to do that, and I like giving these women that don't have a voice, in fact, you know, their say in some of the history. So I think when you're writing fiction, you're often looking for the little things that bring people to life. And so I often incorporate a lot of what would be called material culture. You're looking for you're looking for things that bring their life, make their life real. For example, Mary is a cook. So I have a lot in that book about her learning how to cook and cooking different things and what the food represents, what her food tastes like, working on an open hearth, about how her hands will become scarred for all her life because from the sparks and from burns and stuff. And that's just what an 18th century cook would have. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for things like that bring people to life. For Eliza Hamilton, one of them turned to needlework for a comfort, for artistic outlook, you know, output, whatever. So there's lots of examples of her things, of her needlework still in existence. So you look at how things change. Like she made this beautiful mat to a sort of a frame that's all embroidered with gold lace, everything to go around Hamilton's photograph when they were first engaged. And that still exists. So you sort of see that. And then you can imagine her working that, worrying about whether they were actually ever going to get married, if he's going to get killed in the war, what's going to happen with the war while she's doing the needlework. So there are things like that you look for in addition to just the facts.
Right.
And I've been fortunate to be able with these books to visit a lot of the places where things happen too, which I think is also really helpful to sort of get a feeling of the places, not just how they look, how they smell, how rooms echo, what else is around them that the characters would have seen. Of course, trying to make it in your head 18th century and not 21st century. Mm-hmm. For example, the Schuyler Mansion, where Eliza lived as a child and often returned to, is open to the public up in Albany. In the 18th century, it had, you know, hundreds of acres of land and orchards and stuff around it. Now it's squeezed into Albany, and you can't see the river that once everything flowed down to, and they could see the Schuyler ships coming in and all that. You can't see any of that anymore. So you have to, even when you're visiting, you have to use your imagination to try and get back to the past.
But also, you can presumably use, you know, that Eliza Hamilton is a society person, a society wife, a society hostess, and you know that Mary Emmons is a cook and working in the household. So there are other people who are doing similar things whose lives and sort of detail and, as you say, material culture things you can draw on to, or at least import into Eliza's life and Mary's life.
Sure. And that's where my research takes me, to places like Colonial Williamsburg too, where the people and the historic trades program were extremely helpful about hearth cooking and how everything would have been done, and how, you know, let me, you know, when there's other tourists not there, let me pick things up and feel how heavy is that kettle if you're trying to lift it back and forth, or how heavy is a bucket of water if you're bringing it in from the well. And it's just little things like that that, you know, it's, I don't make a big deal of it, but it just helps build the world in which the characters live and make it an experience for the readers.
Yeah, build that sense of reality of what they went through every day. Well, it just remains for me to say thank you so much for coming on the show, for talking about these two great books. How have they been doing? Do you have people, you know, sort of stop you in the street now that the Hamilton movie's been out on Disney Plus and say, hey, I picked up your book because I saw the Hamilton movie?
Well, fortunately, writers can be very anonymous. No one knows who anybody is. No one chases you down the street. But the best thing is when I Eliza Hamilton has been out just about 3 years.
Yeah.
And having the film version on Disney this last week kicked it up back onto bestseller lists. So I was really pleased by that.
That's great. That's great. Oh, I'd love to be chased down the street by a reader someday. That would be like a new.
It's never happened.
Doesn't happen.
it doesn't happen. It's like reader. I think writers talk about they would love to be somewhere and see someone reading their book, and that hasn't happened either. I've seen people buy my book in a store, and that was exciting, you know. But
sort of anonymously, you were there while they were doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't go up to them and say, I wrote that book, because that's really weird.
It just remains for me to say thank you very much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And can you give us a notion of what you're working on now, what the next novel will be?
Yes, a woman that everybody knows, Martha Washington.
All right. Well, that'd be great. Well, I hope you can come back and do another Fiction Friday with us.
I hope so. I hope you'll have me. It'll be a lot of fun.
We'll absolutely have you. Okay. Well, thank you for again. And again, Buzzkillers, please contact me about getting the book, and we'll talk to all of you out there next week.